This podcast is about people who've worked at C.A. Parsons, but I think what we're going to talk about here probably applies to a lot of people who've worked in similar businesses in the Northeast, like Vickers Armstrong or the mines or the shipbuilding industry. Anyway, I'd like to start by talking about STEM, science, technology, engineering and maths. We have a skills gap and we need to address that. And if we look at our history, we see that the UK was a world leader in scientific and technological innovation. We need to retain that. Siemens, which now owns the former Parsons factory, is one place where full apprentice programmes are still carried out, and it is the completion of an apprenticeship which formed the careers of our previous employees, and it is the completion of an apprenticeship which will allow future generations to thrive and have fulfilling careers rather than a job. So what is the difference between a job and a career? This is one of the questions I explore when I go into schools to try and persuade young people into engineering. The best way is to let history speak for itself here. So I'm going to explore some of the people who worked at Parsons and went on to have great and interesting careers. There have been tens of thousands of people employed over a 130-year period at the business created by Sir Charles Parsons. Whole families were employed there. In the case of one gentleman who retired recently, Terry Foster, his ancestors were there right at the start, one of the original 48. We still have apprentices now like Ben Sweet, whose grandparents worked there. And we have brothers, Chris and his brother Dan, who work there now. But before I start, let's just think about people in the context of work. You see, people are important and people are all different. And what makes us different from plants is that people have emotions and people's emotion drives their behaviour. So when we think about work, jobs and working with people and our emotional investment, we also have to think about teamwork. Here's a quote from Henry Ford on teamwork. Coming together is a beginning. Keeping together is progress. Working together is success. Now my favourite quote, and when I think about Charles Parsons at the Spithead Review with Turbinia, I think about this. There are three kinds of people. Those who make things happen, those who watch things happen, and those who wonder what happened. So, to the young people listening, I'd just like to, you know, ask you to think about that. What kind of person do you want to be? What kind of contribution do you want to make when you go to work? Anyway, let's have a look at some of the former employees from C.A. Parsons. In June 2017, we met Tom Dawson. He was a Parsons employee in roughly 1952. He was born in 1925 and had a twin brother called Stan. When he was 14, he started his apprenticeship at Vickers Armstrong doing naval gun assembly. He was a very keen gymnast and did gymnastics at Vickers Armstrong Boys Club in Elswick. And after the war, he went on to become Northeast Amateur Gymnastic Champion in 1956. Anyhow, he signed up for the RAF Training Corps and then was called up for duty in World War II as a physical training instructor. But he was remustered to what was called armoured. So what was armoured? What did an armourer do? Tom said, "They line the sights up on the gun so you didn't shoot the propellers off." I thought that was quite funny. Anyway, when Tom returned to the Northeast after the war in 1952, he started at Parsons assembling electric transformers. And his twin brother also worked there, but in a different department. Tom said, "My job involved putting in tapping switches, which you used to twist. You didn't learn from documents in those days, you just got on with it. Nothing was written down about sizes." At the same time, he became Northeast Gymnastic Champion and just missed out on competing in the Helsinki Olympics in 1952. He says, "The man who replaced me didn't work with his hands, whereas mine were tough. so I could work through it, and he ended up tearing his hands and not competing. He left Parsons, but then returned again later to work on large transformers, and he remembers being outside in the dark. All you had were the lights on the factory wall. It was the only large factory on Shields Road, employing about 2,000 people at that time, he said. I used to cycle to get to work, said Tom, and you got paid weekly and had to go to a man in a window to collect your wages. It was an envelope and was paid in pounds, shilling and pence. You could get overtime, which you were paid for, and it was an expectation that you had to work overtime at most factories in those days, rather than a request. But there was no health and safety. He said, oh no, you'd just get away with everything. He decided to leave Parsons as their procedures were changing and they had got a man to time him on a drilling machine, and he wasn't happy about that, so he left. Because he said, unlike some fitters, when I fixed something, it stayed fixed. Another story is from a gentleman called John Maudsley. The Maudsley family connection with Parsons and Siemens began in 1933. When two young men, namely my Uncle Jim and his brother Harry, my father, moved from Lancashire and started work in Walker Gate welding shop. They were soon elevated to senior foreman and shop foreman. Following the end of World War II and on leaving school at aged 15, in 1949 I started an apprenticeship, serving my time in the light assembly shop, after a period as an office boy and a spell in the apprentice training school. I was followed 4 years later by my younger brother Norman, who followed on a similar path and then onto the transformer shop and finally into Grubb Parsons before giving up work through ill health in his 50s. 1955 saw me in the RAF as a national serviceman. It was then back to Cap Works and into the General Drawing Office on the Foundation Arrangements section, and finally into the Cost Estimating Department until 1987. There I spent the last 10 years of my career before retiring with my two children, Kevin and Tracy. Tracy's youngest son, Ben, my grandson, born in 1999, continues the relationship now with Siemens. In 2017, Ben was accepted onto the apprenticeship programme, and so the family connection continues. The other remaining connection is that of my sister-in-law, Iris, married to my brother Norman Maudsley, was also employed as a secretary and worked for Norman Parsons. Another gentleman who I'm lucky enough to have met is Jack Massey. He was the group training manager, and he retired after 40 years service in 1997, but he started as an apprentice in January 1957. So that's another example of a fantastic career. And of course, a lot of people remember Jack because a lot of people were trained by Jack. Now we come to Wally Douglas. Now this one really, really captured my imagination. I did an amnesty in the papers and this gentleman got in touch, Douglas Bryant, and he told me all about his grandfather, Wally Douglas. Wally worked all his life at Parsons and ended as head foreman in the 1950s. He was born in 1896 and joined Parsons in 1915. During World War I, he was sent to join the Royal Engineers Northumbria Division, and at Ypres he was shot in the neck. Another soldier who just happened to be a Geordie and who worked in the factory next door to Parsons was there with him. He came to help him and administered first aid. That was Sapper Thomas Dawson, who remained in charge of the younger Wally until he was sent home. Wally returned to Parsons and, as was practice, remained in the army until fit. 1957 saw his 42 years service and a gold watch, which still works today apparently. In 1960 he received an innovation award whilst coming to the end of his career, and he was sent to Amsterdam in Italy troubleshooting. In 1950 the Evening Chronicle photographed him, and that was a big thing in those days. Coincidentally, Douglas Bryant, Wally's grandson, spent 40 years as an army head and neck surgeon, treating many soldiers like his grandfather. But the final twist, when I put the story on Facebook, a lady called Melanie got in touch because she recognised the story from her own grandfather's diaries. She is in fact the granddaughter of Sapper Thomas Dawson, and her and Douglas Bryant have since corresponded about their joint grandfather's story. So that was really nice. And finally, I'd just like to talk about Lily Callender. I was lucky enough to meet Lily Callender. Lily was born in 1921 and lived in the Biker area. She initially worked in a toffee factory. Then at age 17, somebody spoke for her, because that's what they used to say in those days, and she was lucky enough to get a start at Parsons. She started work alongside about 100 other women in the insulating shops. She met her husband at Parsons, Jack Callender, and after some what she called chit-chat at a workshop door. Lily was just absolutely amazing. She remembers the insulating shops were so hot, their feet and lower legs used to swell up, so the girls used to take their shoes off and work barefoot. I couldn't believe it when she told me that. The mica that they used to work with, she said, was like plastic, and it was on a table in front of you. After a while, she moved into the core plate shop, and she remembers there were only two women. One would be punching holes, and the other one was stacking. She had to wear gloves, otherwise you would cut yourself, but there was a nurse on site in case that happened. That workshop was the other extreme temperature-wise. When they opened the door to receive a delivery, she was literally working in the snow and the wind would howl in. Lily had a sister, Etty, who also worked at Parsons in the insulating shop, and then there were other male family members who all went on to have careers at Parsons. So Lily worked there late 30s to the early 40s. Etty was also late 30s to early 40s. Cecil, Lily's brother, worked there in the 1940s. He was a slinger in the Erecton Bays. Jack Callender, Lily's husband, he was there in the 30s and 40s. He was a tool room manager. Sam Roberts, Lily's brother-in-law, probably started there about the same time as Jack, and he was a heavy machine shop manager and retired in the 70s. Steve Dan, another relative, was a turner and borer in the heavy machine shop. And Doug Shearer, Lily's nephew, worked there in the late 60s, and he was an indentured apprentice. And he was trained by Jack Massey, who we were talking about earlier. So we had a lot of family members who worked at Parsons. During her time in the core plate shop, being one of the only two women and the rest men, she remembers the men used to take really good care of the two of them. She especially remembers the men warming her soup for her on their stove for her lunch. She said she used to feel quite spoilt. Following her time at Parsons and during World War II, they were asking for volunteers to go to Birmingham and work in the munitions factories. So Lily volunteered because during those times, you had to do what you thought was right. That's what she told me. She moved to Birmingham in 1943 and was there until the end of the war when she returned to the northeast. She then went to work with wallpaper, checking the shade and the colour matched across the various rules. She thinks that she must have had good eyesight in those days. It was an absolute delight to meet Lily. She was absolutely amazing and we had a great chat. And she agreed to check over some of my documents for me just to make sure that I've got my research right. So that was good of her. Anyway, there are far too many people and far too many anecdotes to record here. But if you'd like more stories or if you'd like to connect with former employees, I run a Facebook page which contains so many current as well as former employees, their stories, their photos and members of the Parsons family. Far too many to mention, and at the time of recording this there is about 350 people on that page, so if you join Facebook and search for Parsons Heritage Project then you'll find it. C.A. Parsons had some amazing leaders, Charles Parsons himself, had some amazing academics and engineers, likes of General Stoney. Then we hear about F.G.H. Bedford, who actually worked there for 60 years. His memoirs are available at Tyne and Wear Archives. You can go in and read them, and it's absolutely fascinating stuff. The man who catapulted the business in the peak of its success, the brilliant Claude Gibb. He was a man who made huge things happen. And then there's more recent managing directors who still attend reunion dues and still talk about their time at Parsons with great affection. People like Richard Maudsley, who's been a fantastic support to me. So the Parsons story and its people lives on. There's Dick Graham, a man who makes things happen. He holds the annual reunion, which I hope people will continue to attend. Tyne and Wear Archives have a load of historical documents, and connected to that is the man who inspired me in the first place and continues to be a source of wonder to me, Mr. Jeff Horseman, Chief Turbine Engineer, who is currently writing the history of the company. I've never met anyone with so much knowledge, so much passion, and I just love him because when it comes to getting historical facts right and when it comes to intelligent research, he's a man that makes things happen, and he keeps me right. There's also people I've come across on this journey, like David Harrison, and he gave me quite a funny story. The Phantom Piper of Parsons. In the late 1970s and early 80s, the company were advised by their insurers that it would be best to have employees on the premises 24/7 in case of emergencies, as well as having security personnel there. It was decided to arrange a standby system in the Works Services Electricians Department, and that two electricians would work outside of normal hours 365 days a year. Whilst just limited work was left for the electricians to do during the night, the men brought in books, etc., to fill in their time. One electrician, however, took it a step further. He was a piper in the Tyneside Scottish Pipe Band, and when it was his turn to be on standby, he brought in his bagpipes. Thinking that no one would hear him practice, he went right down to the bottom of the blade shop, out of the way to practice the pipes. This seemed to him a good idea, as the factory was empty. This arrangement went well for a few months, until the local paper, the Sunday Sun, ran an article about the Phantom Piper. Residents of nearby streets had heard strange sounds during the night and had written to the newspaper about the ghost piper. The press investigated the story and it ran for a while. The company were asked if they had any idea what or where the bagpipe music could be coming from, as they knew nothing about and the mystery was never solved. Needless to say, the Phantom Piper vanished without trace and his pipes were never heard again. So I thought that was a really good story. Another couple of interesting anecdotes about people at Parsons. Depending on your age, you may or may not have heard of Jimi Hendrix. Well, Jimi Hendrix was managed by Chas Chandler. And Chas Chandler worked at Parsons before he got into the music industry. Another person who worked at Parsons before getting into that kind of industry was Jimmy Nail. And of course the most famous one, Brian Johnson, from the rock band AC/DC. And depending on your gay age, again, you might have to Google that. Brian Johnson was a draftsman at C.A. Parsons, and I believe he did actually come back and visit one time. So there you go. We've had some very famous names. We've had as many as 12,500 people working there at its peak. And when you try to think, I've tried to calculate it over 130 years, how many people worked there, from 48 to 12,500. Now we're part of a massive company, so it's impossible to calculate. But tens of thousands of people who lived in the local area, who were in the supply chain, who worked there, who had relatives who've worked there, tens of thousands of people have benefited from a wonderful business, which still continues to this day in the power generation industry, albeit in a different form and albeit called something else, but the factory is still there. And the people and their pride lives on. Thank you for listening.